It's the day after the start of the transition back to the National Hockey League schedule. 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. We are on YouTube. We are available wherever you get your podcasts. It is a disappointing day for Canada. Still enjoying the elation of the gold medal for Team USA. But we have to have our eye on what's going to happen on Wednesday, too, with 8 games in the National Hockey League. This happens fast.
Well, and not only that, trade deadline's not that far away, March the 6th, and teams can make trades today. The embargo's over, and I would not be surprised to see some things starting to happen this week. You know, teams have had opportunities to talk without worrying about games. And when you're talking about moving players, moving money, you wonder if there are going to be more three-way trades this year because of this lull in the action that guys have been able to actually build a parlay, right?
Yeah, I'll be disappointed in the managers if there's not a couple of deals in the first 48 hours after the Olympic trade freeze.
I wouldn't be surprised if there are. I mean, heck, there might be, by the time this gets posted, there might be trades. Who knows?
A lot of the reaction aftermath of the Team USA victory over Canada in the gold medal game, Chris Pronger, gold medalist for Canada, coming up in just a little bit. But what did you absorb in what you saw post game?
The one thing I loved in all the video that I watched was Mike Ruzzioni and the American players embracing, you know, 46 years apart, winning gold, and the fact that there was that ultimate respect for Ruzzioni as a guy who's been around the game as long as he has, and Mike being with those kids. You know, now Mike works in the university system in the Boston area, so he's around young people all the time. But for that to exist as the Americans partied, as they have every right to do, I thought was really kind of cool.
That was great. Ruzzioni with Tirico on the NBC broadcast said, "We've had our time. It's theirs now." And you always wonder, like the 72 Dolphins, like they don't want anybody else to go undefeated and win the Super Bowl. They have the pop the champagne every time the last undefeated team wins. Ruzzioni was leaning into it, like let's go, let's win a gold for Team USA. I thought that was fantastic by him.
Well, here's the thing about Mike. You know, no one will ever do what Mike and his teammates did in 1980. The Olympics were a different animal. The Soviet Union was a different animal. Herb Brooks's team was built a different way. You know, if the expectation is that this is now the new norm, that we're going to see NHL players at the Olympics on a regular basis, a team like that will never ever be built again, will never exist again. And so there's always going to be a special place for the Miracle on Ice. There always will be a special place. It's, you know, in many ways, it's like Babe Ruth 714. Mm. We all learned about 714. Well, who holds the record now? Right? I think it's Barry Bonds, but
it is. I wasn't sure whether you were asking me or whether you were just finishing up.
No, it's kind of a rhetorical question because 714 is still a number that reverberates with so many people. And so from that perspective, I think Mike's team will always be there, but he's right in that this team and for this generation is something very, very special. And I certainly hope that, you know, that they are treated that way and feted that way as the NHL returns. I mean, the Devils have had a tough year, but Jack Hughes is a hero. You know, that's going to be that's a good homecoming for Jack. Your team, Darren, the Golden Knights are going to be in Los Angeles on Wednesday night. If Jack Eichel plays, I hope he gets what he deserves. Noah Hanifin gets what he deserves for being such a, you know, a great part of the American team winning the gold medal. The fascinating one for me is, and the Jets start on the road. What will Winnipeg's reaction be to Connor Hellebuyck? I have a sense it will be electric.
Yeah.
And it will be a standing ovation for Connor Hellebuyck.
As it should be. Same if the Canadians would have won, the reaction by the players that play in the United States. I would have expected it to be embraced.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. And I'm not ignoring Austin. I hope Austin gets treated well when the Maple Leafs come home.
I'm going to throw some numbers by you. Just the tie-in between 1980 and 2026 and the decisive games. That in a second, but we got Pronger coming up. Oh. On 100% Hockey, I love it when Pronger gets together with John. There's always a couple of little jabs. Or
I tell you what, Chris and I have shivers,
or just punches to the head.
Ever since he played, you know, it's a hey Johnny,
you know. Johnny. Pronger coming up, 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here.
Here we go.
Watch every game from every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to four games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
All right, I'm just going to sit back and let Chris Pronger guide us through this. I've got a couple of ideas of what we want to talk about, John, with Chris, but it could take a left turn. Are you going to be okay with that?
Me or Chris?
You.
Oh, I'm fine with it, you know.
Chris is aware of the hell he wants.
No, well, that's right. By the way, I'm going to say this. I'm going to say this right now. Chris Pronger should have been on television at the Olympics. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to say that. And it wasn't for lack of trying. Not on Chris's part, but on mine.
Oh, really?
Oh, I tried to lobby for Chris to go to the Olympics. He would have been. And I, you know, Kevin Bieksa, Cassie and Cheryl and Elliot did a very nice job. But there was one thing lacking, and that was a former Canadian Olympic gold medal winner. And who better than Chris Pronger? So that's why he's here today, because he wasn't on network TV. So he's on 100% Hockey.
Which means I got to see everything on TV.
Yes.
Everything transpired.
So what's your takeaway?
Oh boy, man. Lots to digest. I thought Canada played way better than I was expecting. Just based on the four nations against the U.S. and then the duress and the difficulty with which they had in dispatching Czechia and Finland. Both played very tight. And while Canada has incredible players, they tend to want to do it by themselves. And that, I think, ultimately, when you go back to the ending of the 3-on-3, against the U.S., MacKinnon tried to take them one-on-one. McDavid tried to take them one-on-one right before the goal. And then Makar tried to take them one-on-one. All, like, within a minute. They didn't come as a three-man unit. They didn't try to exploit holes in two-on-ones and things of that nature that hockey's founded on, those principles. And so, you know, in the end, it bit them. And the subtle poke check of the puck by Jack Hughes around Makar.
Right.
That moment, it's to me, the, you know, and I don't know if it's the amount of time he played, and then he didn't play that much relative to what he normally plays, but the pace of that game was otherworldly. He looked a little tired, but he, like, more lackadaisical in his mindset. The Makar, that is. And I think he lost sight of the magnitude of the moment in trying to force that particular play right there, as opposed to, you know, live to fight another day and just retreat. Why are you pressing there when you already got a guy down low deep in McDavid? Why are you doing that? But I mean, that's kind of how they play.
And that's the challenge of 3-on-3, right? It can get away from me in an instant.
Fast. And then, you know, I'm watching the normal feed where it's showing, you know, I'm in America, so I'm watching the American feed and they're showing all the American parts of that goal. I didn't get to see the rear view of that goal until late last night mm-hmm. when I got home. And, you know, you see the lack of desperation in his ability to come back. You kind of see the lack of awareness, I guess, defensively on that 3-on-3. Like, oh, well, you're guessing that nothing is going to mount from it or come from it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it's in the back of your net. Like, oh my God, we're done. You know, and it's crushing.
Awareness or structure, Chris?
I think it would be both. Huh. Awareness and details of defensive posture in a 3-on-3 situation. Like, where are you going to go? You need to create that diamond right in the slot. That's mm-hmm. where you need to retreat to that area and then move from there. That, as you watch the NHL teams, as you watch these other teams, when they do 3-on-3, that's the area with which they protect religiously, is that specific slot area with what we'll call a diamond. You know, we'll call it a diamond, and it moves in different ways, but they try not to get too stretched out so that the seams and those holes in the middle aren't open.
Well, let me ask you this. Two things that jump out for me is, you know, a 3-on-3 in the NHL, there's no intermission. Yep. So the 18-minute intermission, and you don't have to answer these right away, but would the intermission be a factor? And B, because of the magnitude of what the victory means versus 2 point versus 1 point in an NHL game in 3-on-3, do you approach Olympic 3-on-3 differently than you approach NHL 3-on-3?
Well, yeah. Because there's a gold medal on the line.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying, like, that's kind of...
I know, but that was my point in the beginning, that I think he lost sight of what was that, the magnitude of what was on the line, would be my guess. Just watching how haphazard he was and just trying to reach for that puck. Mm. There wasn't a 50-50 puck. Jack Hughes clearly had the advantage in the proximity to the puck. You know, albeit, you know, it wasn't 100%, but it was, he out of 100%, probably 70% of the time is going to get that puck. So the odds right. were with Jack Hughes, not Makar in that moment. As it relates to the 18-minute intermission, you could say that the U.S. had time to gather themselves, but you could also say that that Canada had a chance to catch their breath because they were mm-hmm. pressing so hard. And they could say, maybe they were pushing too hard and they were like, hey, we need to take a breath here and compose ourselves so that this, you know, again, so the magnitude of the moment doesn't get us, and maybe they relax too much. I don't know, but I honestly think the biggest issue in that 3-on-3 was the fact that they tried to do it 1-on-1 or 1-on-3, more importantly. And they didn't utilize, not that you're going to pick guys per se, but just deception and movement and things of that nature that we've seen in other 3-on-3 goals throughout the course of the Olympics.
If three guys were going to do it, it would be those three guys, though.
Correct.
That's like...
And it's not like one guy's faster. They're all fast. So they can all mm-hmm. play to that same level, that same pace. And by the way, we could beat this into the absolute ground. Were they going to beat Connor Hellebuck? It was going to have to be a perfect shot like that first goal was by Makar. He couldn't have shot that puck any better. I mean, he got it this much over the pad, this much under the blocker and right in that little joint area there. I mean, it just it was a perfect shot. And that's the only way they were going to beat Connor Hellebuck, or maybe score in one of the empty nets that they had that they didn't score.
And Mitch Marner did the same thing. Like he beat guys. He beat one on two for the overtime winning goal earlier. So it did work. But I understand exactly what you're saying about setting up an attack.
Well, it worked. It worked against Finland. It didn't work against the U.S.
Right.
Right. So. Mm-hmm.
By the way, you know who got assists on the Hughes goal?
That would be Werenski.
And Hellebuck.
Connor Hellebuck. Connor Hellebuck got an assist on the gold medal.
Yeah. There's by the way, there'll be a nice little byline that nobody's going to get in 10 or 15 years.
He was.
Keep that tucked away, John. That's a keeper.
Well, I figure I'm going to hear it on Amazon one night when you're on. So.
Hold on. Okay, it's in there. It's in the Rolodex. Yeah,
Regrets for Canada? Are there any beyond that 4-minute stretch in overtime?
Well, yeah, they didn't score in the empty nets that they had.
Mm. Wow.
Those guys will. It burns inside of you when you lose these, especially a game like that they were in full control of, but they weren't. It was tied. They never, at no point did they have the lead.
Right.
So even having said they were in full control, they weren't. They were, but they weren't because they didn't have the lead. Mm-hmm. And moments like that, games like that, tournaments like that, I mean, they eat at your soul. What could I have done? What could we have done? You know, how could I have changed this mistake? Why didn't I back check? Why didn't I turn the puck over? Why, you know, why didn't I make the save? Why didn't I, you know, there's always a what if and why didn't I and how could we have and, you know, all the different things that we're seeing every armchair quarterback say now.
like you.
Yeah, like me.
Well, to your point.
It's painful, though. It's painful.
There's
going to be a lot of these guys that waited, 12 years to get back to the Olympics. They're not going to be there in 2030. This was their one chance. Mm-hmm.
So if you've won the Stanley Cup, or no, if you've won an Olympic gold, some of the, like Drew Doughty won a couple of gold, one with you. Sid, obviously, maybe that's not fair, but guys who have lost Stanley Cups or guys who have won Stanley Cups or guys who have won Olympic golds, which memories do you think of first, the wins or the losses?
Well, I think of the losses. Those are the ones. I mean, when you're reminiscing with your teammates, you're talking about the victories. I remember when in 2007 we did this and that.
Right.
But when you're sitting at home and that fuel and that fire is burning inside you, I'm thinking of game 7 against Carolina. I'm thinking 98 against the Czechs. I'm thinking 2006, what the hell happened? I'm thinking 2010, overtime game 6. Like those are the it's not the, you know, first round game 7 loss. It's not the second round game 6 loss. I mean, there's still a lot more in front of you. It's those ones where you're this close, where it could have, shoulda, woulda, and if only this or that didn't happen, or you got a bounce or a lucky whatever. There's so much that goes into it, and you know that's the stuff that these guys will have burning inside of them, and how they use that to push them forward. You know, we'll see, but it can crush and defeat players, and you might not ever be the same, or it can spur you to greatness. You never know how it's going to affect you.
Let's take a break. Continue to lean on the experience of Chris Pronger on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
Car shopping should be exciting, not exhausting. That's where Car Gurus comes in. They have advanced search tools, unbiased deal ratings, and price history
so you know a great deal when you see one. It's no wonder that Car Gurus is the number one rated car shopping app in Canada. When you're car shopping on your phone, it shouldn't be a maze. You need to see all the information. With the Car Gurus app, you can. Powerful search tools that you see deal ratings, price history, and dealer reviews on listings all in one place. And you can turn on real-time price drop alerts so you never miss a great deal. Car Gurus connects you with trusted dealerships when you're ready, ensuring a transparent, hassle-free buying process. Buy your next car today at cargurus.ca. Make sure your deal is the best deal. That's cargurus.ca. Cargurus.ca.
Full shows on YouTube, still available wherever you get your podcast. Lean on that provider. Here's Chris Pronger back with us. What do you think Sidney Crosby's feeling today?
Oh, man. I'm sure he's gutted for his teammates. Gutted that his opportunity at another gold medal, the biggest stage, was not able to go. You can see in his post-game interviews, you could see he was trying to hold a lot back, just emotions and, the build up to this one. Again, in light of the fact that he has two gold medals, it was another opportunity for him to do something nobody's ever done, have three. Him and Doughty would be the only two with three from Canada anyways. And to have that big of a gap between, it might hurt a little bit less because he didn't play, but it might hurt a little bit more because he didn't play.
Now you have to wonder if he can come back and play for Pittsburgh too. That's the other part of this.
What was it? An ankle, a knee? I mean, it was one of the two. It didn't look just the way he was trying to push on it there in that Czechia game. It didn't look good the way he was favoring it. But it'll be interesting to see how that plays out here.
We should pay attention a bit to the victors. Because they won the game and they won the gold medal. Yeah.
They found a way. By the way, at the end of the day, John, they found a way to win.
Right. Yeah, and give them credit. As Nathan MacKinnon said, we played a better game, but they won, and that's okay. Yeah. I mean, they won, we lost. That's the facts. That's it.
Yeah.
By the way, I think MacKinnon had been misquoted a lot in the last 24 hours. I think just check the whole quote out. He says that they're a great team. It wasn't, as whiny as some of the quotes made him look like. I got to ask you,
can I read you the full quote?
Yeah,
I have
please.
It right here. Here's the full quote. It's been close for a while, meaning the two teams and how they battle. They're an amazing skilled group of players. Nathan MacKinnon said post game. I just felt like it wasn't going to be. You guys can be the judge of who the better team was tonight, but they won. We lost.
Yeah.
Full quote.
Yeah.
That's it.
And that's a fair quote.
Yeah.
You live in St. Louis.
By the way, I said the same thing when I got on here. I thought they played better, but that doesn't mean that you deserve to win because the other team won.
Yeah.
So, by the way, if we take it back and look at history of the National Hockey League and all the games and all the Olympics and all the things, the best team doesn't always win.
No.
You get a hot goalie, you get, incredible performances and, on and on and on. Like, just because I thought they played a better game, they didn't win. So that's all that matters.
Have you ever made a save like Charlie McAvoy did?
The one in the crease where he...
Yeah. Like that thing was going in.
That was pretty impressive. I mean, just think of all those moments like that. Hellebuck, kind of reaching back with his stick to, hope play. And Taves pushes it right into the shaft of his stick, the paddle of his stick. Darren, you're a goalie. It's not easy to do. There's a lot of empty net there he could have flipped it into, but he hit it into his stick.
Or if it was a half a second earlier or a half a second later.
Yeah. It was in the right spot as he reached back. It just, there's so many things that go into it that have to go right. And the fact that he made that desperation move.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He didn't quit on the play, which speaks to, you know, the totality of his effort throughout the course of the Olympics. You know, a lot of question marks on him, on Binnington. I mean, it's they both answered the bell. Hell of a bunch of specials.
Tell you what, we talked a lot over the last couple of days, a guy like Dylan Larkin, who made a huge impression. I think, you know, convinced a lot of people that he is an elite player. People in Detroit may know it, but not many people outside of Detroit.
who, by the way, almost died in the first period. Oh, my God. I saw Wilson coming. I'm like, oh, this is not going to end well. And he saw him at the last possible second and just, he got hit, but he didn't get maimed the way he would have been.
And popped right back up.
Yeah, he may not have gotten up if he got hit with the full force of that one.
I was saying earlier, you live in St. Louis, and there is a tremendous, the alumni there, the Blues, the community have done an amazing job growing the game of hockey in St. Louis. It might be one of the greatest examples. And when you look at Matthew and Brady, I know their father was a player, but a guy like Clayton Keller, and then all the kids, all the American kids that are now playing in the NHL that came out of the St. Louis programs. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, I know Ann Arbor has the development program, but St. Louis is almost like the unofficial capital of hockey in the country at times, isn't it?
There seems to be a nice draw here with the minor hockey system now. A lot of guys hanging around. Like I remember when I first got here in 95, you had Rob Ramage and Basil was just finishing up his career, Basil McRae, and Blake Dunlop was here, and those guys were, you know, their kids were invested in the minor hockey program and they're building up, and a couple of them went to play at the NTDP program and on into college hockey and things like that. And then Al McInnes and Walt and those guys stuck around to coach their kids and kind of build out the AAA program and the development program here. And, they've done a fantastic job in teaching these kids what it's going to take and sometimes teaching the parents what it's going to take and trying to keep them out of the way. Make sure they get out of the way so the kids can, A, enjoy the opportunity to play and, learn and just soak up all the information they can and try to live out their dream. And, you know, some kids make it, some kids don't, but you want people and families and kids to leave the game, hopefully in a better place, and then they pay it forward and pass along to their kids because they had such a positive experience playing the game of hockey.
You know, I guess my point is, you know, 46 years ago when Herb Brooks ran that team and they won. By the way, the Soviets played a better game too.
Yeah,
the Soviets were better than the Americans. The Americans just scored.
Okay. Sounds very familiar.
Yeah, that's why they called it a miracle.
Yeah.
But when Herb ran that team, his job was to, he had two groups. He had the kids in Minnesota, and he had the kids in New England. And they had to find a way to bond them. But now the game, we always talk about growing the game in the United States. And the great, got to go to grow the game. The game is growing. And the game has grown. And we, the three of us, and a guy like you, Chris, who's played the game and have been around the game as long as you have, you've witnessed it all. And that's why the Americans are as good as they are.
Yeah. And by the way, this win is only going to help this rivalry. Because while we were calling it a rivalry, it may have been a rivalry at the World Junior level, but it wasn't a rivalry at this level. And now it is because they won. And now Canada's like, okay, they have a target on our back. We don't have a target on our back anymore. They have a target on their back. And we're coming for them. Now in the World Cup, now in the next Olympics. And that's the burn, if you will, that's going to fuel the fire to make sure in 2 years, 4 years, that you're able to exact revenge and hopefully come away with a gold medal or a championship or whatever it is.
Outside of Hellebuck, who is the American's best player?
In the game or total?
The tournament.
Oh, Quinn Hughes, by far.
Quinn Hughes?
By far. By far. I thought Jack Eichel was dominant, just in how he controlled the game. Matthews was excellent defensively. Didn't provide a ton of offense, but enough that, you know, I think their roles and the identity of their team, they're not necessarily, they have some high flying players, but I think their identity needed to be exactly how they won. Tight, try to play tight defensively, play physical, play in your face. Is this reminding you of any other country that
exactly
used to play that way? But don't.
It's almost like they reversed themselves, right?
Correct. Correct. Yeah. Exactly. Mm. Exactly. And how do the Finns play? That exact same way. Tight defensively, physical, in your face, aggressive. You know, so there's going to be a lot of opportunity to look in the mirror, wonder what coulda, shoulda, woulda. But, you know, I think we saw an incredibly exciting and entertaining hockey game. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, and I've said it a few times now on some other stuff, I don't think the people at home watching on TV have any idea exactly how fast that game was. The pace with which they played that game from start to finish was on another level.
All right. So now we're going back to the NHL. When you came, after 98, after 02, after 06, what was the transition for you as a player to come back to the NHL? How hard was it, or how hard was it for you to engage in the competition again?
Not hard from the competition side, but you know, when you're with the best players in the world, the hockey IQ, the hockey sense, the ability to read plays and know, you know, when somebody's moving in a certain direction, these are the seams that are going to be open for a pass. All those little things, when you're playing at the highest level, guys understand. Guys know where to go. Whereas you get with your NHL team, it needs to be very structured, you know, because you have all levels of understanding and play. And so you're talking a lot on the bench or in practice. Problem is, they don't practice anymore, but to figure out where I want to get you the puck so that you have the best opportunity to then either advance it further or carry it in and we can create some offense and little things. And the ability to kind of slow things down a little bit. Everything is happening so fast out there. It's like this, where you're looking at things and it's going by you. You're like, holy, your ability to slow things down and just extract all the information and process it. Well, now you can do it at a much slower pace. Mm-hmm. So you actually are well ahead of everybody when you come back because of how quick things were. But you quickly kind of come back to the level with which you have to play in the NHL. You can't play at that level in the NHL. It's just not. And by the way, that's like playing playoff hockey nonstop. Like it's not, you're not able to play at that level for 82 games plus playoffs plus like that is, right. That tournament is every 4 years for a reason. You can't play like that and survive without getting hurt and injured and all the rest of it. It's just not, you know, so when we think about, oh, why can't they do that? 82 games. It's just, you can't play like that at that pace, that intensity, that energy, exertion. It's just not possible. So I've seen a few people talk about, well, why don't they just play like that all the time over here? I'm like, because you can't. I remember playing again the 1 year when I was in St. Louis, we were playing again. Calgary got off to a great start. I think they were 12-2 or whatever it was. And Greg Gilbert was the coach. And they were playing playoff hockey. Like they were playing and they gassed out. Like yeah. It is a long grind of a season, as you know. And sometimes you are trying to pace yourself. You're trying to ramp up to April. You're not going like this. It's a slow ramp up to get to, you know, optimal level come April so that you can then put the hammer down and step on the gas pedal.
So what's the challenge for the guys that won gold and the challenge for the players that took silver? in getting back into the swing of things? Are they different challenges?
Similar on, but different. Similar but different. If you're, let's say you're the Americans, it's trying to stay, it's refocus. Some of the teams that they're going back to are out of the playoffs or will be soon. So there's that. Some of them might get traded. if they're out of the playoffs, they might get traded. And it's more just about, you know, I remember we came back from Salt Lake in 2002 and we just happened to be on a West Coast swing with St. Louis. And every city we go to Vancouver and there's a big production and a puck drop and we're out there, you know, shaking hands and kissing babies. And then we go to Calgary, same thing. And then we go to Edmonton, same thing. And, you know, you have to, at some point, for lack of a better term, you have to cut the cord and be like, okay, great, but I have to shift my attention over here now. Like, this was great. Right. We'll enjoy it another time. You know, I've taken a week or two to soak in it and revel in it, but now I need to, this is my job and I need to refocus. And if you're, you know, so if you're the Americans, you have to figure that part out. And if you're the Canadians, you're devastated and you're probably still in shock. You can't believe you lost that game. And it's going to hurt for a long time. It's going to burn. But how do you get past that? How do you flip that switch and be like, okay, I've got to now refocus on, if you're Colorado, you know, they're odds on favorites still of probably winning the Stanley Cup. How do those two, McKinnon and Makar, get refocused? Taves. How do they get refocused? You know, both Taves and McKinnon missed empty nets. Right now, everybody's blaming Makar for these goals. Like, how do you get over the negativity and how do you get over being a pincushion for these, you know, it's not going to end anytime soon. People are going to be beating us into the ground for a while until we get past the trade deadline, past, you know, there's something else to talk about. But it's going to sting for a long time because this is an opportunity lost because of how well they played. It would be different if they played like shit. And if they were dominated, if they were dominated and they lost, it would be easier to take. They're in that dressing room right now, or were in that dressing room, stunned, heartbroken, defeated, that shocked that they lost. They can't believe they lost because they played so well. When you look at the metrics of the game and you look at scoring chances, 45 for Canada, 23 for the U.S., scoring chances. Cycle chances, 12 for Canada, 6 for the U.S. The only thing that they lost were faceoffs.
Right.
They weren't very good on the faceoffs. But outside of that, I mean, when you look at these numbers, they don't speak to expected goals for Canada. Just expected goals for were 5.8 versus the U.S., which was 2.7.
So that's a massive number. Expected goals to be that different is
huge. The delta between
5.8
and 2.7 is huge.
Yeah, I don't know about you, Chris, but I expected 9 goals.
John's not big into the expected goals.
I'm not big on that. I'm not big on that stuff.
I don't really look at that much either, but that's, I just saw a bunch of these numbers online. No, I know. And I'm like,
that's why they play the game, man.
Exactly. Thank you, John. You beat me to the punch. These numbers, you can throw them into the garbage or throw them in the toilet. Nobody cares. All you care about is the scoreboard. Period. Yep. End of story.
Yeah. As a defenseman, how difficult was defending the Matt Boldy play?
I think what happened to me, it looked like Makar got a little outside of his, he got wide.
Yeah.
And then he had Taves coming over. So I think he felt like Boldy was probably, I think he felt like he would dump it. So he was getting wide to then turn and go get it. Mm. And thinking maybe he's going to change, maybe, you know, whatever. I think they both relaxed at the same time, thinking either the other would go get it or the other would pick it up or the, you know, and Makar got too wide. And then when Taves came over, Boldy did a great job of pushing off him and then chopping at his stick to push it away from tapping the puck. And then he got past them so quickly. And then it was, I mean, think about the breakaways Canada had too.
Yeah.
McDavid breakaway, Celebrini breakaway. Like, we're talking about McKinnon and Taves missing empty nets. How about the breakaways?
Yeah.
Like, we go, and that right there, that's going to be their nightmare, is all of the chances that they had to score. All of them. Like, going into the game, it was like, well, how are they going to generate chances? Well, clearly it wasn't a problem. They created a crap ton of chances. So,
and by the way, no symposiums though this summer. We won't have
no need for a summit. There's no need for a summit. You caused the summit, Pronger. You caused the summit.
From which year?
Which 98. Year? 98.
Oh, 98.
98 was the first one. You guys caused the summit. We had to have a summit.
Yeah.
Where is our game going? Yeah. Well, yeah, our game is going because a Czech goalie beat us.
Yeah. Sorry. And by the way, how many times have we seen that in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs?
Sure.
Yeah. Hot goalie just shuts it down. It happens.
Well, in fact, the Hellebuck save on Taves, I actually thought of Vegas's first trip to the Stanley Cup final and Braden Holtby.
Or the second trip to the Stanley Cup final, Aiden Hill. I mean, a similar type paddle save. What do you think it does for Hellebuck going forward? He's probably not going to be the playoffs. And that's one of my biggest disappointments, is he can't take this and turn it into something now. But
what he can long-term, they're not going to make the playoffs this year. What he can is just, he can always recall it. He can always fall back on it. This is how I rose to the challenge in the biggest game of my career. Mm-hmm. And this is the type of game I was able to play. And if he could have that recall and that mechanism to get back into that place where he was at, you hope if you're Winnipeg, he can find that again and again and again after this year. Whatever.
Okay.
How many? They're quite a few points out, are they not?
They're 11. I think they're 11 out.
They're done. They're okay. There's too many teams they got to pass.
as a former player, we saw Sidney Crosby get hurt. Ramifications for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Josh Morrissey hurts. We don't know what that does for the Jets, if at all, if anything. Kevin Fiala gets hurt. Done for the season for Los Angeles. Do you still support going to the Olympics?
Well, this was negotiated in the CBA, and my biggest contention with this whole thing, going to the Olympics, even back when I was there, early on, I didn't understand the magnitude of the business side of things, let alone the injuries. The fact that they can't use any of the footage, they can't use the footage to market, and we're going to grow the game. But we can't use any of the footage. We can't use the Olympic logo. We can't use any of this stuff to showcase the sport and the game and what we just saw. I'd love to see what the numbers for viewership were. I can only imagine how massive they're going to be. In Canada, in the U.S., they're going to be huge numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that you can't use any of that stuff, the footage, to market the game in the NHL, they're all NHL players that were playing in the gold medal game. That's the most frustrating part of it all, is that part. Because we're going, A, for the opportunity to represent our country, but B, to grow the game. That's why the owners are letting them go. And they're willing to shut their league down for 3 weeks in the middle of the season. 3 weeks.
Answered my question.
What's that?
With everything that's gone on, and you listed 17 other things other than the injuries that I listed,
I was adding to yours.
But do you want to go to the Olympics then?
I'm not a player. I would want to go if I was a player.
Okay.
But as a player, I want to go for sure. But if I'm an owner, or if I'm a manager, or if I'm a president, or if I'm a fan, and I see my top player of my team get hurt, think about 2014. If you're the New York Islanders and Tavares blows his knee out, there go your playoff hopes. There go whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many things that can happen. And by the way, and I just talked about it. These players are giving it everything they have.
Right.
Every shift, every period, every game. Like, they're laying it all out there. This is like a Stanley Cup Finals with the magnitude of the moment. So, I mean, if I'm a player, I want to go for sure. Because A, I want to win a gold medal. B, I want to represent my country. And C, I want to play against the best players. I want to challenge myself and see where I'm at.
We'll wrap it up this way, because this is something that we can all relate to. People that are listening, John and I, certainly, we all got up and watched it at various times. 5 a.m. in the Pacific, 8 a.m. in the Eastern time zone.
Well, you're assuming the people out west went to bed.
Yeah, good point. Hawaii, I had friends up for 3 a.m. Watching. Where did you watch? How did you watch? As a former gold medalist.
I was down in Dallas visiting my kids. My two boys live in Dallas. And I was down there in my son's apartment watching the game.
And are you an involved fan? Are you an active fan? How do you watch?
I was a couple times. I got a little like, what the hell are they doing? And my son had to look at me. He goes, Dad, you know they can't hear you, right? I'm like, I know, but yeah. I just had to get it out. I didn't want that. I needed that pressure release. The pressure valve blew and I needed to get it out.
Are your kids American or Canadian, Chris?
They were born in America. They were born in St. Louis.
Are they cheering for Canada or the United States?
They were cheering for Canada and the United States.
they win. They win.
Yes, they won. Yes, exactly. Either way, they were winning. They were going to tell their friends either way. Yeah, won a gold medal.
When are you back on TV?
I am doing Blues TV on Thursday against Seattle.
Mm. And then, what about Amazon? When are you on Amazon next?
Then I'm on Amazon. I'm going to be in Vancouver on March 9th.
Okay.
Ottawa is in Vancouver. And then from there, I'll be on Hockey Night in Canada on March 14th.
Busy man.
Yeah.
You're busy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you would have been busy during the Olympics if your agent could have got you in there.
I know. I know. Did my best.
Get it together, Johnny.
I want that clip pulled. I don't want to play it over. Get it together, Johnny.
Boom, boom, boom.
Oh. Prongs, great stuff, buddy. Thanks for this.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Back with more 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Wrap it up right after this.
With the NHL app, you can listen to every NHL game right from your phone. And with home and away broadcast feeds, you choose your way to listen.
And he scores!
Whether you're at work, at the gym, or stuck in traffic, the NHL app puts you right in the action all season long. Every team, every game, everywhere you go. Download the NHL app and never miss a moment.
Johnny. I don't think I've ever heard anybody call you Johnny. Like, I've done it in jest, but he just calls you Johnny.
Not many people do.
A couple of things. Oh, one, he read the Nathan MacKinnon quote. Yep. I said yesterday that he wasn't happy with his silver medal. It was actually the little gift that he got, the stuffy. Okay. Like, what am I supposed to do with this was his look when he got that. So yeah, I just want to
confirm
that.
What happens now? What happens now at Olympics is that there's the medals are given. And so there's two levels of VIPs giving out things. Mm. Luc Tardif, who's the president of the IHF, gives out one level. He gave Nathan his stuffy. But then there's an IOC member that gives out the medals. I was thinking about this after the game. Because, we revel in the fact that, and it's great that the medals go to the players. What a novel thought. That, the Stanley Cup gets given to the players. I think it would have been, and this is something that the Federation should think of. Now, not that the Federation is a regular subscriber to 100% Hockey, But wouldn't it have been magnificent if Mike Ruzioni had put the medals around their necks? You know, wouldn't it have been great that, you know, passing the, you know, in many ways, passing the torch. And what you do is you plan it out and you say, okay, if Canada wins, we're going to put.
I feel like that happened in an Olympics or a World Junior or something to that effect.
No, but I'm talking World Junior is different because that's not, the IOC is not involved. This has to happen at the Olympic level. It's an IIHF tournament at the Olympics. So I understand why the president of the IIHF is involved, Luc Tardif. But it would have been magnificent had Mike Ruzioni put the medals around the necks of the Americans. And there would have been an opportunity for a great Canadian to put the silvers around. And if Canada had won, it would have been the reverse. So that's my idea for the day.
So Gretz or Ruzioni, right?
I would have. That's what I would have. And the great thing about, you know, the broadcasters do have influence. And, you know, if it just would have been a, and when I say broadcasters.
You mean the broadcasters have influence?
NBC.
Oh, they, okay. I thought you meant Edzo or Mike Johnson.
No. As we plan for the next Olympics. As we plan for the next Olympics, wouldn't it
have, but the VIPs are still going to want their moment. Now you just have to come up with a third thing to give them.
Well, give them we've stopped giving flowers and we're giving stuffies. Well, flowers.
I don't get the flowers.
Because there needed to be a second gift. You know, there needed to be a
second gift. The stuffies are actually a step up from the flowers. As crazy as it is. But the look on McKinnon's face did say it all.
Yeah. And I'm glad Chris cleared the air about Nathan's quote. Good for Nathan, good for Chris.
All right. 1980, the miracle on ice.
Yeah.
Do you believe in miracles? Mm-hmm. Team USA beat the Soviet Union 4-3 in that game. Compare that result, and that was regulation time, to yesterday at Team Canada losing to Team USA in overtime. The shots heavily favored. We've been over it for Team Canada. They outplayed Team USA. In the miracle on ice, the shots were 39-16. So, sort of the same ballpark.
But Darren, what were the expected goals?
Good point. Shot attempts were 52-25. I can tell you that, but I don't know the expected goals.
I expected 10.
And sometimes you get goalied.
Sometimes you get goalied.
That expected goal stat that Pronger brought out, you don't hear a difference between one goal and five goals, the expected five, a difference of four ever. Like, that's extraordinary.
It's gobbledygook.
but that gap is huge. We're back. We got the start of the National Hockey League season, resumption of the National Hockey League season with eight games on Wednesday night. Should be fun. We'll turn our attention full force towards the National Hockey League as we continue this week.
I'm looking forward to getting back to the NHL season. I don't have to work every day.
Too bad, Johnny.
Hey, don't get me going.
Here's Johnny.
Oh my God!
Talk to you guys. Somebody actually
said on YouTube that Shannon should do what Johnny Carson did and retire. So
you read way too much of that.
No, because we had a ton of positive reaction everywhere to what we did during the game. So thank you very much.
If I want to be knocked down, I'll listen to my kids. That's the case.
Well, when was the last time you were called an owl-faced?
Yeah. Not. I don't wear those owl glasses like you. I was gonna, you know what I was going to say was, who?
Yeah. Thanks.
Talk to you next time on 100% Hockey.